The Story Factor Podcast, Episode 13. Ian Rhodes, a geeky data guy who also understands storytelling, talks about what he's been doing lately.
Welcome to the Story Factor Podcast with Annette Simmons.
Story is the oldest form of influence in human history.
Annette is the author of The Story Factor, Territorial Games, and Whoever Tells the Best Story Wins.
When you stimulate human emotions with a story, you point those emotions in a certain direction.
Now Annette is here to help you inspire, influence, and persuade through the art of storytelling.
No one will complain if you substitute a story for a PowerPoint slide.
Notice I'm not using PowerPoint and there's no handouts. My goal is that this actually be valuable enough that you remember it.
And now your host, she walks her dog between 4 and 6 every day she's at home, by demand. Here's Annette Simmons.
Yeah, my little munchkin of a dog is more strict than any trainer I ever had at a gym. It just goes to show that help can come from any direction. And we get some help today from Ian Rhodes. Not your traditional storyteller, but a data geek, guitar-loving entrepreneur who opened his own guitar store and realized that telling stories was what he did all day long. We start off with Ian talking about the decision to open his guitar store.
It took me about 2 months to actually think, let's just do it. Let's go there and let's actually do this guitar shop. So it started off with me. I just blogged about guitars. This was back in 2002, 2003 time. I just blogged about guitars. Yeah, it was before blogging existed. So I just, you know, hard coded, very geeky again, using the wonderful technology available to me at the time. I just talked about guitars, but I talked about it from a guitarist's perspective. You know, why it wasn't about the detail behind it. It was about how it made me feel, how buying new strings, how that changed the sound of the guitar, and just really started to get to the emotions behind why people buy things. So I started to get, you know, people say, hey, where do I buy this stuff? Why, you know, how can I get my hands on these guitars? So I set up a little guitar shop.
Your passion for the guitars and music really came through.
Yeah, I've been playing it for 10, 15 years at the time, and I was a born-again guitarist. I suddenly found myself, you know, with a bit of money, a little bit of time, to be able to actually start to play the thing again in my life. And yeah, it's just that sort of that passion, which I guess, you know, looking back now, all I was doing was telling stories. You know, the company progressed. We took on shops, we took on a distribution center, warehousing, et cetera, but as the company grew, every week I was in, you know, on the Saturday on the shop, and people came in from, you know, found you from the web or was driving by, and they just told you stories about why they love their guitars, why they wanted to be a guitarist. Yeah. And they wanted to hear your stories. You know, suddenly, wow, you own a guitar shop. That must be, you know, looking back, it was amazing. But at the time, it's like, you've got all the access to all these guitars, and it's fantastic. And, you know, tell me about what's your favorite guitar, etc. Every guitar you talked about, you had a story behind it. Mm-hmm. So you weren't selling to these, you know, the guys coming to the shop didn't come in to buy a guitar. I think, you know, the idea was they weren't coming into the shop to buy a guitar in their head. However, they usually went away with a guitar in a guitar case with them.
Right,
on the back
right,
of just, you know,
right.
Suddenly they think, yeah, I don't need to buy a guitar, but suddenly, you know, I've heard the stories about these guitars, and I've got the guitar hero. I want to sound like Eric Clapton. I want to be like Jimmy Page. I want to do this, that, and the other. And, you know, if you've got a guitar which is, you know, resembles or replicated how that particular guitarist played their guitar, then, you know, people suddenly had they understood why they were buying a guitar. And
oh yeah, I mean, you can.
So we just tell stories.
I mean, we play air guitar just for the feeling. Imagine having a real one in your hand.
Yeah,
And then, you know, imagining, you know, this is just like Eric Clapton's. My God, it could be Eric. I could be. You
play that one note. You play one note of Eric Clapton, and
right.
You've got that feel, that vibe, and you're thinking, yeah, this is, you know, it's a hobby, it's a passion playing the guitar. And if you get in tune with what it is that drives people to purchase a guitar or drives people to love their guitars or just to think about buying one, then those stories really do resonate. And yeah,
so
you don't.
How did
again,
that translate to? I mean, tell the story about how you moved into where you are now.
In what fashion? With my business now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, how did that translate into how you do what you do?
How do I? It translated by the fact that it was taking what happened offline. It was taking that element of conversation which took place offline. You take on the persona of the authority. People came into the shop and they talked to you about what it is they're looking for. And because I'd had those numerous conversations, you know, dozens, hundreds, thousands of conversations right. with different people, you were treated as the authority. Because people thought, you're in a guitar shop, you must know what you're talking about. You know, guide me in terms of what I should be buying. And that's the process we go through each and every day. We go to a website. Every single time we go to Google to search for something, we're looking for an authority or someone to trust to be able to guide us in what it is we're looking to purchase or what we're looking to, information we're trying to find out. So it's taken until I set up story. I've been consulting now in paid search and SEO and all these different elements across the years because that's what historically I've done and what my my hobby as well as my career has been. But now suddenly, I've read some fantastic books. There's the book, Tell to Win, Peter Guber. And suddenly, he talks about business storytelling. And you think, wait a second, that's what all I've been doing. That's what you do. That's your job as a marketeer. You know, Seth Godin says that marketing is storytelling.
Yeah.
And wow, of course it is. You know, suddenly it's that sort of that moment where everything sort of falls into place. You think, yeah, that is what we do for a living. That's what as marketers do. And so that's where sort of I translate that sort of methodology of not necessarily, I'm not saying that how you sell a guitar is how you sell a healthcare product or a car or anything, but it's engaging people. It's talking people in the level they're looking for
in an
authority voice.
Yeah. And so how important is it to have being an authority on a subject or being an expert on a subject? How important is that to a storytelling for a brand or consultant?
I think it's massive, isn't it? Because it reflects it's our CV, it's what we do, it's everything we've done. The stories we tell are based on research. They're based on what we've done right and what we've done wrong and our learning experience. And you can't do that unless you've had experience doing in a particular field.
Right.
So that's how your authority grows. It's because you've I'm not saying you've been there, done that, but you understand what it is, what the objectives are. You relate that to a particular market, a particular industry, a particular brand, and you start to get that path. That path evolves then. And companies could be spending thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of pounds or dollars on paid search advertising without necessarily knowing what they're doing right or what they're doing wrong because they're simply putting people through the homepage or they're just trying to be a bit too clever, and users don't want clever; they just want simplicity. Right. They want authority. So it's again.
Do you think some of them are measuring the wrong thing?
Yeah, I see it. I audit what companies do through analytics. I could see what it is that what goals companies set, and a lot of time, there's a big focus on bounce rates. Bounce rates, how many people leave your site within without looking at any other pages, and there's a level of detail you need. There's a lot of sort of categorization and adaption of content or data to be able to answer the questions that people are looking for, and people never usually have the time to be able to go through and actually segment data to answer the questions. They matter, but they matter in context. And if companies are using landing pages, and which is basically, you have a single page, which is all about what someone's come through for. We don't want you to look at any other page. We just want your information. Here's the inquiry button. Click here, subscribe, etc. So the bounce rate of that is going to be exceptionally high because 10% of people are going to see it and think, this is what I'm looking for. 90% of people just disappear. Then when you blend that data in with data from your homepage visitors, where you see far higher engagement levels because it's the entry point and there's a whole plethora of information available to you, so your bounce rates can be far lower when you've got that access to further information on your website.
Do you have software that starts to blend this stuff based on your knowledge, or is it...
It's all in Google Analytics. Yeah, all the information you require is usually in Google Analytics.
But the interpretation of the information is what you're so good at. And I'm trying to figure out if you've actually been able to automate any of that, or is it still just in your head?
Oh, I wish you could automate it. It's it's not in your head. There's practices and methods by which you've learned from experience. So yeah, we talked before about authority, and that authority, I guess, comes through again of seeing how companies view their data and being able to analyze that data and be able to segment that data.
And also testing stories. I mean, you've got experience with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. You can have split testing. If companies are focused on paid search advertising as a quick win to be able to get people through to the site, you have two, three separate stories running, and then you see exactly what engagement you get on the back of that story. With video now, you can see the amount of time it takes, how many people drop off from a video. All the information's there for you.
Yeah.
It's just, again, how you categorize that information and how you act.
And the information about everybody's video is actually there, which is amazing.
Oh, absolutely.
You can watch other ones. You can start to learn from that.
So, and there's a scary amount of data available to you. There's too much data available to you.
And that's one of my issues. It's like, oh, crap.
Where do you start? There's probably
Where do you start?
You build a dashboard. You think about what key, your KPIs of the business. What is it you're trying to achieve? And then you drill that information down, and then you just build a dashboard, which you circulate through your company on a weekly basis, a monthly basis. So everyone's in tune with what you're doing and what's causing issues, what's causing a positive impact on the back of your work. So as I said prior, the answers are there. It's just being able to dig down into that data to be able to find those answers.
Let's talk about the About Us page. One of the have you seen Michael Margolis? I think it's a web delivered training on how to write your About Me page. Have you seen
I have. I've seen Michael's work. His storybook manifesto, the Story Manifesto, which is fantastic.
Yeah,
absolutely fantastic.
I love it. We just interviewed him last week.
Oh, brilliant! Yes,
but
yeah.
The About Us is, like you said, is so important. And I'm wondering, have you ever tested, done some even A/B testing on the About Us, or what is the process that you use to create that particular
story? The process is proof of concept. And how do you define or how do you prove proof of concept? It's taking what your existing About Us page is and split testing that against the competitor, essentially. You have two pages running against each other, essentially. So 50% of people see one particular page, 50% of people see another page. And once that's within the actual analytics path, that's in the path to be able to, path towards conversion or the path towards engagement within your site, you can then moderate. You can see exactly what, the length of time people spend on that particular page. And it is absolute key. It's crucial. It's one of the last moments, I think, before you think about calling a company or about an inquiry is, it's just, who are these guys?
Right.
You've sold me a good story. You've told me about your weird, wonderful ways that you can provide me with a solution to the issue I have.
And hopefully, you've already helped me.
There'll
be some experience of, wow, that helps.
Yeah, and then you have that. So just one second before I pick up the phone. Let's just who are these guys? Who is it? And if on that About Us page there's not detail about who you are, that's it's about us. So I want to find out about you. Your company is not good enough to go into there with we've been established for 10 years, we've done this, that, and the other, our clients are these. Doesn't tell me about me, or doesn't tell me about you. It's not about us. It's very much about, again, you mentioned before, a mission statement or the slightly sort of cloudy sales approach which people can take through their About Us page. So it's critical, and I'm very keen to hear Michael's view on it, because there's not enough focus, I don't think, on About Us pages.
Well, Michael takes people through a huge journey, a big transformational journey, which is, kind of like, who am I in the world? And then through the process of self-examination, brings them to some sort of almost a spiritual sense of who they are in the world. And then he starts to add those personal details, like, I love chocolate, or my dog walks me instead of me walking it, or those sort of personal details.
I was looking at a company the other day. I think it's in hosting services for websites, and we're in the market, but the same as our the typical audience does. You go to that About Us page, and I was greeted with a picture of their building. No, and it is just, wow, is that how you view yourselves? It's like, because you have a wonderful looking building. That makes me think you guys, I trust you because you've taken a lease on a fantastic building. And it was just so...
It should have a little sign that says paid for.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, paid for by our customers who trust us. And it's just, again, it's... There's no thought went into it and no actual reasoning and no rationale as to why someone would click on the About Us page. Yeah, I could be investigating a company. I want to find out the name of the marketing. Sometimes there's a fear that if you put the names of the individuals, then you're going to get telephone calls, you're going to get this, that, and the other, and LinkedIn, blah, blah, blah. That's a repercussion. Unfortunately, it's a repercussion of being online. It's a repercussion of your business being transparent.
That's life.
Deal with it.
Yeah, right.
It's fine. So that's going to happen. Well, spam folders are there for a reason. And so, again, to go back to that company, it's like, you've got to, what about just even presenting the staff, as you said, biographies, fantastic, why are you doing it? And just a bit of quirky information on there is brilliant.
Right.
So it's about, I find out about you.
Yeah.
And that's why I've clicked on the About Us button.
Right.
Don't give me a picture of your building. It wasn't saying that.
Unless you're climbing it or.
Yeah. But it was a very good looking building, I must admit.
Well, they're really proud of it, obviously. Yeah,
absolutely.
Tell me what you think about the state of story. Most of the people I'm talking to, we were into storytelling, before storytelling was cool.
Yeah.
10 years ago, and you're fairly recent to it.
Yes,
but, I've noticed a shift in what people define as story and how people translate story into content and their theories about content.
Yeah.
I'm just interested to hear in your overview about where story fits in, how it has changed, and what you see as the future and how people should be using the concept of storytelling.
Yeah, so it's a brilliant question. It really is. And I like to think about this. There's two variants on story. There's the story and then there's the stories. The story is the umbrella approach. It's the who we are, what we do, why we do it, conversational piece. It's the all-encompassing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I think people think of it in the singular format, what is our story?
Mm-hmm.
As compared to what are our stories?
Mm-hmm.
Then suddenly that opens things up. People are far more comfortable with it. Stories are happening. Stories are occurring each and every day around you.
Yeah.
So once you start to actually to net that aspect, that sort of aspect of conversation, it suddenly makes people feel a lot more comfortable. So you say, well, what is your business story? And they compare that to what are your business stories? And that's where I think a lot of companies are suddenly opening up now, thinking, we do have stories exist. And it is, there's the amazing books out there. I'm speaking to one of the authors right now. And, it brings in the human approach, why we tell stories, culturally or historically, how we've told stories, how we've got our points across from the caveman dwellings through to, as you mentioned in your book, I think you mentioned, with Martin Luther King Jr., but, if you read the speech, it's thought-provoking. If you hear the speech and see the speech, wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And that's the idea, which I think that's what people need to think about is how they get how they get their point across. And if you can do that via video, amazing.
What I like about what you just said is it removes the sense that there's they have to get it right.
Yeah.
One of the things when I'm working with clients is that their inhibitions come from wanting to get it right.
Mm.
And that it's almost as bad as the wordsmithing of a mission statement, and it just destroys the story when they start picking at it to make it right. And when you say, what are our stories, it gives more permission because they know that all of the different things will get through just in different stories.
Yeah. Yeah. And the context of those stories is far easier to apply now. We've got, the last couple of years, content marketing is suddenly... SEO has evolved into content marketing. Everyone's talking about content marketing. And content marketing is effectively, I call it, is business story with benefit. It's about, companies struggle to blog, companies struggle to build articles because they don't know what they should be talking about.
Right.
And then we start to talk to them about the elements of business storytelling, the history, the culture, the psychology of the business storytelling, the storytelling approach. That's when companies open up to the idea of telling their stories.
So in a way, storytelling just opens the doors for more content. Is that what
absolutely
you're saying?
Yes, yeah. And that content, you know, the story, where does it resonate? It resonates from the business. It's individual to a business. And one of the questions that every, you know, every marketer, every business owner asks, whether it's, you know, a startup or, you know, a multinational business, is, you know, how do we differentiate what we do from our from our competitors? Well, the answer's there. It's the stories that develop your business. You know, it's your
Your uniqueness is going to generate different stories. I think that people have to be willing to be vulnerable because their idiosyncrasies, our idiosyncrasies, start to show through, and we're like,
it's the
same, you know, social fear as a teenager. It's like, will they like me?
Yeah, yeah. We make mistakes, and I don't think this should be, you know, if you're writing an article without a story behind it, and you try and outline a mistake you made as a business, wow, you know, where's the justification behind that? It's just, yeah, it's making you look foolish. If you link it into a story in terms of, you know, we went down this road, it didn't necessarily, you know, advocate the answers we were looking for, so we switched, we thought about a different process, this is the client's response to that process, and lo and behold, you know, here's the hero of the story is the way that we came up with a solution for our client. So it's a bumpy road. It can be a bumpy road. You can't get the bumpy road across if you're telling a narrative which is just is bland and it's not from a first person perspective. So it's that's where I think storytelling really comes into its own, where you have that honesty and you have that trust through your strengths, your weaknesses, and, you know, how you get to an end goal.
One of the things that I was actually I was listening to Catherine Burns from The Moth yesterday.
Okay.
The Future of Storytelling had a hangout, Google Hangout, and
right.
I've been dying to learn more from The Moth. Do you know who I'm talking about?
I don't actually. No, no.
Oh my
I'm
gosh.
Gonna write it down as you
TheMoth.org. speak. TheMoth.org. The Moth is an urban storytelling nonprofit out of New York that has just gone boof.
Okay.
And they create performance stories out of true tales. And they say true tales told without notes. But what I've learned is that they take a story that's just amazing. Perhaps somebody got lost at sea.
Yeah.
And then they work with that storyteller for up to 6 months, crafting the story into a performance piece. And you can go online, videos, there's tons of stories. Podcasts, there's tons of audio stories. It's the best way to train yourself up as a storyteller is to listen to stories. It's like an osmosis.
Yeah.
And their stories are always amazing. But the Catherine was saying yesterday that every story is really about something much deeper. And so when I talk with a client and they have a story that they really like, you can go deeper and deeper into it, almost like, what is this a metaphor for? So, you know, you made a mistake, but let's go into, you know, what are the values that were at risk here?
Yes,
And you can tell more and more about who you are through a tiny anecdote, but it does take work.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. It's fascinating for me to hear, you know, the psychology behind storytelling and the history behind it and how it sort of, it relays outside of necessarily business storytelling, but also in, you know, from a cultural perspective too. So, yeah, I'm certainly going to keep an eye on the website.
So tell me, what's the coolest thing that you've discovered about storytelling recently? Or the coolest thing you've discovered recently, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I think I've suddenly become quite hooked on TED. It's again, this isn't necessarily related to your content. This is about your pure on the stage storytelling. And I initially got into TED by thinking about the marketers, your Seth Godin's, et cetera,
right.
Listening to what they had to say. And then the beauty of TED is you have the ability to be able to see what other people are talking about and lo and behold, different ideas and different elements. And so you sort of diversify away from marketing. You start to hear stories from all sorts of different cultures, all sorts of different industries and backgrounds. And
do you have a recent favorite?
I do. There's a company in the States. It's always from the States. Business storytelling, by the way, is I can I think in the UK we're a little bit more reserved, and we're probably not as good at storytelling as you guys in the States. So that's, I think, yeah, the cultural shift. We are looking to the US, I think, potentially for guidance in terms of how storytelling evolves.
I'll tell you what, and being from the South, you know, we have such a tradition of storytelling. It's. I remember a Northerner saying, "It's no fair. You're from the South."
Excellent. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And we watch with admiration over here.
So what's that company? I'm curious.
I will find. Yeah.
TED.com is
on TED.com.
TED.com is a website. If listeners don't know about it, technology, entertainment, and design. TED.com, and you can see magnificent storytellers. And again, it's the same like as what I was recommending with the moth. If you just continually listen to good storytellers, it builds your skills by osmosis. I don't understand how it works. I don't care how it works. I just know it does.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you find them?
It is. Yeah. It's a company called O-Power. O-Power. Let me just see. I'm on their website now. This is live. Trying to find the a link to the actual. Brilliant. But it's about consumption of electricity.
Mm-hmm.
That shows you how differential it is from marketing, and about how we look at it. It's all about comparing and contrasting electricity usage from one house to another. And once you start to flag up what individuals, your next door neighbor, how much electricity they're using, suddenly then you start to become far more aware.
My first experience of that was in Australia.
Yeah.
And I was actually teaching a storytelling, I think I was keynoting some sort of behavior marketing or something like that. And the Australians, and this was in like 2003 maybe, the Australians figured out that if you could see what your neighbor was, and it's an average, you actually don't know, you know, what Kathy next door is using. But you can see an average, whether you're above average or below average.
Yes,
And, of course, all of us want to be above average. And that changes it. And there were some other things. So I bet that's the sort of thing that they're talking about.
It was, yeah. It was just fascinating. Again, it's a psychology behind why people do things, why people suddenly care about results.
Like the book Nudge does.
Absolutely.
It delivers a
whole
lot of that.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, we all go on in our happy lives, and suddenly it's that system of checks and balances, I guess. And so that just, I found that absolutely fascinating. And since then, you know, I've been I focus on TED a lot. And so, yeah, probably watch in my hour a day of blogging, I probably set aside 15 minutes or so just to see what's going on there too. So
I love that.
You just get your inspiration from these sort of, from guys. And it's whether you take it on for your own work, your own ambitions, fantastic. But at the same time, it's just having that interest in what else is going on out there, which I've really found interesting.
We're
going
to wrap up here, and tell me what it is that you want to learn next.
What a brilliant question. A lot of it's the moment. What I like is the blend between the storytelling approach and it's the storytelling and the science. And the science, unfortunately, is how you take the data behind the storytelling. So it's almost like you've got this beautiful foundation of history of how we get our messages across, how we get our points of view across. Yeah, how we relate in what we're doing to how it's happened in the past, and then you've suddenly got the facts behind it. So I'm loving the way that the relationship between big data, which is all about the data which drives our decision making, etc., and how these two giant sort of aspects, the scientific approach and the human approach, how these two are coming together. I just find that out. There's more and more information coming out, and that's where I think potentially, business storytelling is evolving more and more into content marketing. Content marketing is evolving more and more into the data aspects of, what's happening behind the scenes. So you've got, before, you had these two compartments, silos within the business, and how these silos are now converging. I just find the data coming out at the moment absolutely fascinating. I think, especially, you can look at the US market and the UK market, and we're in the UK, I think we're still behind the times, unfortunately, from a content marketing perspective. But it's driving. But again, we're far more reserved in our nature. So it's suddenly the conservative element of the MD who's been in charge of the company for 20 years, suddenly putting a microphone and a video camera in front of this guy and saying, "Tell us your story." They've never needed to tell their stories before.
Right.
So I'd be really interested to see how the more impact business storytelling has on the science approach and the human approach. what the results of that are going to achieve.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what that's going to do to the web.
With my psychology background, one of the things that I feel certain about, and I have no data to support it, but, well, maybe a little in other areas, that the science, we're going to be able to find correlations. But I have not found anything that's actually predictive.
No.
Because each one of these things, that's why we do A-B testing. You really can't take the elements of something and, you know, look over eight things and they all share three elements and translate that into these three elements then will create the same results.
Yeah.
It's a correlation. It's not a cause effect.
Yes. Yeah, completely agree. I think it's that's where we're trying to get to. Again, it's the prediction, the predictive element, which is, I think, getting more and more sophisticated. You know, how people act at particular days of the week or times of the day in terms of, you know, the story engagement or how people enact on their mobile phones compared to the tablets, compared to the desktop computers, compared to laptops, whether they're on a plane, a train, sat at their desk, drinking their coffee. All of this sort of information is coming through at the moment. It's how you... I guess how you start to then look at how you tell your story across those different platforms, across those different time zones, et cetera, which is...
And I think the danger is that people think that this means that.
Yeah.
And not necessarily,
you make an assumption,
because there's too many variables.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely agree with you.
Well, it's been fantastic talking to you.
All right, fantastic. It's been an absolute pleasure, Annette.
The pleasure was mine. I just love talking to Ian. He's so smart. Well, if you have any comments you'd like to make, send me an email, Annette@AnnetteSimmons.com. Talk to me on Twitter, @TheStoryFactor, or call the feedback line at 318-479-1077. This has been the Story Factor Podcast, and I look forward to hearing from you.